This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Bookmark on the Bigger Picture. I'm Uma Pagan, I'm PK Pagan. At the beginning of this year, I set myself a challenge. 50 books in 50 weeks. My year of reading recklessly. There are so many reading lists out there of those classics, of those books you must experience before you die. And while there are some objective standards by which we can judge these things, reading, for the most, is an incredibly personal and intimate experience. In many ways, throughout our reading lives, many of us have inadvertently invented our own ideal library of classics. This is my attempt at doing that, but in a far more public manner. I'm hoping you'll join me for the ride. Last week, I began by indulging my populist side as we took a look at Arthur Conan Doyle and Sherlock Holmes. This week, we're staying in England, only with Charles Dickens and his Great Expectations, which, like Pride and Prejudice, like Moby Dick, like The Lord of the Rings, like Anna Karenina, we either keep meaning to read or just downright lie about having read. Then again, we've seen that Ethan Hawke Gwyneth Paltrow version. Surely that's got to count for something.
I'm not going to tell the story the way it happened. I'm going to tell it the way I remember it.
She's beautiful, isn't she?
But what do you think of her?
She'll only break your heart, it's a fact.
And even though I warn you, even though I guarantee you that the girl will only hurt you terribly, you'll still pursue her.
Are you with anyone?
I'm here, aren't I?
I mean, like...
Like a steady boyfriend?
Charles Dickens, who was born over 200 years ago, we celebrated his bicentennial in 2012, wrote a long shelf of novels, 14 in all, not counting The Mystery of Edwin Drood, which remains half finished. They are plump and bursting with life. They are wonderful chronicles of the chaos of existence itself. He was quite possibly the greatest writer of the Victorian era. He was a social reformer. He wrote sprawling serial novels that chronicled and condemned the injustices of the age. He was an entertainer. He was a satirist. He created vivid characters such as Scrooge and Miss Havisham and Uriah Heep, who are still as relevant to our culture today as they were two centuries ago. If that isn't genius, I don't know what is.
Dickens was addicted to work, addicted to achievement. No bad thing when you're 20, 30, 40-odd. Not always a good thing when you're 50-odd.
A quote from Norrie Epstein's The Friendly Dickens. Dickens's observation of folly, affectation, hypocrisy, self-deception, deception of others, and the way in which people manipulate language to these ends just tickles one. Dickens does what comedy has always done. It both exposes imperfections in the world and reconciles us to it by making something entertaining out of it.
What makes Dickens run is that behind him he always hears in the distance, no matter how prosperous he may seem, the specter, the horrid possibility that he may fail as a novelist, that he may lose his popularity with his audience, that he may fall back into the lower middle class from which his father and especially he had risen.
This is a testament to the power of his prose, and one that best remains experienced on the page. No stage, no movie, no television serial has ever been able to improve on the imagination when Dickens tells a story. His words in Great Expectations, all 183,349 of them, are ceaseless and penetrating. They are so precise that they practically remove any and all vagrant thought you may have while reading them. He lets you visualize every detail. He makes you feel every emotion. Now, there is much of Dickens that should be on your bookshelf. A Tale of Two Cities, A Christmas Carol, Bleak House, The Life and Adventures of Martin Chuzzlewit, even Little Dorrit. Great Expectations, however, more than any other of his works, displays the individuality of Dickens's genius. The book begins on Christmas Eve 1812, when a 7-year-old orphan named Pip has a terrifying encounter with an escaped convict in a graveyard on the wild Kent marshes.
Written in 1860 and 1861, a decade before Dickens' death, Great Expectations is widely regarded as one of the great novels in the English language. It boasts some of Dickens' most memorable scenes, not least the opening, set in a graveyard on the North Kent marshes. Here, a young orphan Pip is visiting his family's graves, a typically Dickensian scene-setter, when he is accosted by an escaped convict, Magwitch.
A man who had been soaked in water and smothered in mud and lamed by stones and cut by flints and stung by nettles and torn by briars, who limped and shivered and glared and growled, and whose teeth chattered in his head as he seized me by the chin.
The book ends with a grown-up Pip in a familiar garden in the winter of 1840. Over the course of nearly three decades, we follow his life as a series of events, a summons to meet the bitter, decaying Miss Havisham and her beautiful, cold-hearted ward Estella, the sudden generosity of a mysterious benefactor, all of which seem to conspire to change Pip's life forever. Pip starts the book as a guileless orphan who lives under the thumb of his shrewish older sister, Mrs. Joe, and her simple-minded but good-hearted husband, Joe. His most eventful incident in his childhood is helping a convict on the marshes escape.
Keep still, you little devil, or I'll cut your throat.
No, sir, no.
Tell us your name. Quick.
Pip, sir. Sir.
Show us where you live. Point out the place.
There, sir. There.
Now, where's your mother?
There, sir. No, sir. There, sir. Also, Georgiana. That's my mother.
Ah, and is that your father along with your mother?
Yes, sir. Him too. Late of this parish.
Ah. And who do you live with? Supposing you're kindly let to live, which I ain't made up my mind about yet.
With my sister, sir. Mrs. Joe Gardery. Wife of Joe Gardery, the blacksmith.
Blacksmith, eh? Now look at here. Do you know what a file is?
Yes, sir.
Do you know what whittles is?
Yes, sir. Food, sir.
Then you get me a file and you get me whittles or I'll have your heart and liver out.
If you'll kindly let me keep upright, sir, perhaps I shouldn't be sick and perhaps I could attend more.
Now you bring that file and them whittles to me in this churchyard tomorrow morning early.
Yes, sir.
And never dare to say a word of having seen such a person as me.
No, sir.
If you do, your heart and liver will be tore out and roasted and ate.
But after being invited to play at the home of Miss Havisham, an eccentric spinster who's never recovered from being jilted at the altar long ago, and meeting a beautiful but haughty ward Estella, Pip begins to resent his simplistic upbringing and the middling blacksmith career and life that seems inevitable for him. Then, out of nowhere, Mr. Jaggers shows up at Pip's doorstep and tells his stunned family that he has great expectations bestowed upon him by a mysterious benefactor.
My name is Jaggers. I am a lawyer in London. Now, Joseph Gardner.
Yes, sir?
I am the bearer of an offer to relieve you of this young fellow, your apprentice. You would not object to cancel his indentures?
The answer is no.
Very well. Recollect the admission you have made and don't try to go from it presently.
Well, who's are going to try?
I didn't say anyone is going to try. Now, I return to this young fellow. The communication I have got to make is that he has great expectations.
Pip will spend the next couple of years training to become a proper gentleman. His benefactor's identity is a secret, but Pip is convinced that it is Miss Havisham. He meets the upper-class members of London society, including the friendly Herbert and loathsome Drummle, forgets about his old life, and courts Estella. But it is not until Pip finally discovers who his benefactor is that the plot really begins to thicken, and Pip is forced to mature by confronting a variety of surprises, disappointments, and unexpected revelations. Narrated by a middle-aged Pip, Great Expectations can be read read on many levels. It is a morality play of a young boy's coming of age and his unexpected rise across the classes of society. It is a social critique on how money affects everyone around it. It is a suspenseful mystery complete with secrets, shady characters, thieves, and murderers. This is a book about reinventing oneself, moving up the social ladder, about hard knocks, about the taint of the past. It is a book about loyalty, about guilt and complicity, about the subversion of gender identity. But most of all, it is a book about character, good and bad, and all the shades between. And we'll get to that in just a little bit. You're listening to 50 Books in 50 Weeks with me, Uma Pagan Ampake Pagan. This is Bookmark on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, this is Bookmark on The Bigger Picture. I'm Uma Pagan Ampake Pagan, and today on 50 Books in 50 Weeks, I'm taking you deep inside Charles Dickens' Great Expectations. It is a book that features one of my favorite literary characters of all time. It's not Pip, who, much like Hamlet, are literary orphans working out father-son issues in dramatic fashion, whose ultimate heroism is not enacted through derring-do, but by showing moral courage and a comprehension of his own weaknesses in his belated care for the boogeymen of his youth.
The night all of my dreams came true, and like all happy endings, it was a tragedy of my own device. For I'd succeeded. I had cut myself loose from Joe, from the past, from the Gulf, from poverty. I had invented myself. I'd done it cruelly, but I'd done it. I was free.
I did it! I did it! I am a wild success! I sold them all my paintings! You don't have to be embarrassed by me anymore. I'm rich! Isn't that what you wanted? Huh? Isn't it great? Are we happy now? Don't you understand that everything I do it for you. Anything that might be special in me is you.
No, the hero of this Dickens, while being a pitch-perfect portrayal of real psychological depth and complexity, is actually the least colourful of his cast. It's not Estella, the arch super bitch, the mean girl from whom the term is invented.
Well? Well, miss? Am I pretty?
Yes, I think you're very pretty.
Am I insulting?
No, not so much so as you were last time.
Not so much so.
No.
There, take that, you cross little monster.
What do you think of me now? I shan't tell you.
Because you're going to tell upstairs, is that it?
No, it's not it.
Why don't you cry again, you little wretch?
I'll never cry for you again.
In there, boy.
She's a cow, a merciless viper whose ability to spread discord in men's hearts is breathtaking. She can crunch them under the heel of just one of her pretty satin shoes. She is all-powerful, and her ultimate tool is her ability to rebuff, to reject without compassion, without conscience. Estella is a great character, but she could have easily been retread from a Thackeray novel. But no, it's not Estella, it's not Pip. Dickens' most prized literary creation is a woman frozen in time. Well, she's not exactly frozen in time. That would make this a very different kind of book, but figuratively at least.
I am told you are an orphan.
I am, miss.
So am I. So is Estella. Are there sisters and brothers?
Well, there's my sister, what I live with.
With whom I live? No one else?
There was five of us, miss.
So they are all dead. Have you never wondered why you survived, Pip? why you were chosen to live?
I do, miss.
Perhaps you were meant for something special. Perhaps it is intended that you, like Estella, will be different and extraordinary. That is all for now. Come again next week to play. Hannah will show you out.
Miss Havisham is often portrayed as old and decrepit. Only she isn't. She's merely betrayed, defrauded and abandoned by the man she loves on the eve she was to be married. She has chosen to be eternally wed to her loss. She wears her white wedding gown, now frayed and yellow. On her foot is one shoe. She got the news just as she was about to put on the other one. Her wedding cake, moldy and decaying, sits still on a table laid long ago for a wedding feast. Her half-packed trunks lie about the room, never taken on the honeymoon that was meant to be, but never was.
What do you think it is?
The cake.
The bride's cake. Mine. Take my hand. Walk with me. Today is my birthday.
Any upper return?
No, I will not have it spoken of. No, on the stairs here, long before you're born, this heap of decay was brought here. We've worn our way together. Mice have gnawed at it, and sharper teeth than mice have gnawed at me. When the ruin is complete, when they lay me dead in my bride's dress, on the bride's table, the curse will be finished on him.
She isn't even a proper character, really. Not by any measure. As an image of the withered bride jilted at the altar, living in a state of perpetual mourning for what might have been, she is magnificent. But as a character, she is a caricature at best. That's always been the problem with the dramatic interpretations of Miss Havisham. They are extreme, ethereal, and monotonous, and it's really difficult to believe in her. The same, however, cannot be said for the text. She's the driving force behind Dickens' novel, and it's Miss Havisham who has lived on most vividly in many imaginations. Miss Havisham is an image, an illusion, a manifestation on the ravages of time and circumstance upon the body, mind, and soul. Her treatment of Estella is a masterful depiction of this decline. Adopted by Miss Havisham at a young age, Estella never gets an opportunity to forge her own identity. Raising Estella as a tool to avenge her broken heart, Miss Havisham objectifies her into a beautiful doll that she can mold. Described through gestures and little physical detail, Estella has no individualized physical presence in the novel. Pip tells the reader that she's beautiful, but does not actually describe her, and the reader knows Estella only through her hand motions or shining eyes. With this unusual lack of a physical description, the text constructs Estella as if she has no individual essence and instead simply represents a mosaic of gestures and phrases.
Now, I sometimes have sick fancies, and I have a sick fancy that I want to see some play. So, play. Go on, play. Play. Are you sullen and obstinate?
No, Mum. Very sorry for you, and I'm sorry that he can't play, but if you complain to me, I'll get into trouble with my sister. So I would play if I could, but it's just so nowhere.
Call Estella. Estella! Estella!
This parallels Miss Havisham's view of her, this portrayal of Estella which creates her more as an object than as a person. It constructs her as a valuable commodity because of her beauty. Describing an encounter between Miss Havisham and Estella, Pip observes that the older woman is hung up upon Estella's beauty, hung upon her words, hung upon her gestures, and sat mumbling her own trembling fingers while she looked at her as though she were devouring the beautiful creature she reared. Rather than seeing Estella as a whole person, Miss Havisham objectifies her by breaking her into the separate pieces that together create her vehicle for revenge. She uses Estella as a tool to torture men. She constructs her as a commodity whose value only comes from her alluring sexuality. Even Estella shows that she defines herself as Miss Havisham's creation. She forms her identity according to the pieces that Miss Havisham values in her.
Estella, come here.
your own one day, my dear. And you will use it well. Let me see you play cards with this boy.
With this boy? But he is a common laboring boy. And look at his boots.
Well, you can break his heart.
What do you play, boy?
Only beggar my neighbour, miss.
Beggar him?
Four for the ace. One for a jack.
He calls the knaves jacks, this boy. What coarse hands he has. You stupid, clumsy, labouring boy.
She says many hard things of you. But you say nothing of her. What do you think of her?
I don't like to say.
Tell me in my ear.
I think she's very proud.
Anything else?
I think she's very pretty.
Anything else?
I think she's very insulting.
Anything else?
I think I should like to go home now.
And never see her again, though she is so pretty.
And then there is her appearance that is so haunting. All dressed in white, but of a white which has long ago lost its luster and has faded to yellow. A cross between a waxwork and a skeleton. And this brittled, damaged, despairing woman we begin pitying comes to turn such misery on both Estella, the daughter she has brought up on her own, and Pip, the young man she champions and in the end betrays. She perceives herself as a defender of the rights of women, but her victories on men are so petty and vindictive. But it's Dickens's descriptions that bring her to life. Once I had been taken to see some ghastly waxwork at the fair, representing I know not what impossible personage lying in state. Once I had been taken to one of our old marsh churches to see a skeleton in the ashes of a rich dress that had been dug out of a vault under the church pavement. So goes Dickens's description of Miss Havisham when we first meet her. Jasper Ford has a much funner explanation of how Miss Havisham came to be Miss Havisham. In The Well of Lost Plots, his often hysterically funny novel about alternative universe where people take reading really seriously and characters have their own reality, explains things differently. Miss Havisham was, you see, too short. As she tells the heroine of The Well of Lost Plots, who in another Ford novel changed the original ending to Jane Eyre to the one we know, "I remember when I was in the well. When they were building Great Expectations. I thought I was the luckiest girl in the world when they told me I would be working with Charles Dickens. Top of my class at generic college, and without seeming immodest, something of a beauty. I thought I would make an admirable young Estella, both refined and beautiful, haughty and proud, yet ultimately overcoming the overbearing crabbiness of a cantankerous benefactor to find true love. So what happened?" she asks. "I wasn't tall enough." "Tall enough? For a book? Isn't that like having the wrong hair colour for the wireless?" They gave the part to a little strumpet who was on the salvage from a demolished Thackeray. "Little cow, it's no wonder I treat her so rotten. The part should have been mine." And she fell into silence. But whatever it is that makes Miss Havisham Miss Havisham, there is one thing that has constantly plagued me throughout my numerous readings of Great Expectations. I fear her. I respect her. I even admire her begrudgingly. But I'm never sure I have any real affection for her. Next week on 50 Books in 50 Weeks, Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. You're listening to Bookmark on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.